Welcome to the Well Mind with Dr. Mike show. I'm Dr. Michael McGee. It's great to have you today. We have a very, very special guest today with us. His name is Dan Griffin, and Dan is an expert in men and being a healthy man in the 21st century. He's written several books. One book is A Man's Way Through Relationships, Learning to Love and Be Loved. Another book is A Man's Way Through the 12 Steps. And he is also an expert on recovery and helping men recover from addiction, and has written published books on that as well, and has an upcoming book coming out with a friend of ours, Alan Berger. Right, Dan?
That's correct.
What is the name of the book?
That's called What Men Would Tell You If They Weren't Too Busy Watching TV.
That's a great title, and I think that's available on iTunes now, isn't it?
The CD that Alan and I recorded is available on iTunes. The book is not quite available.
Okay. Well, that's great. And you can learn more about Dan at his website, Dan Griffin, GRIFFIN.com. But Dan is a truly, truly extraordinary individual, really a leader and expert in the realm of male psychology, recovery from addiction. He himself has a recovery history, I think, since 1994, right, Dan?
You are correct. Yes, you're making me blush. If you could see me, I'd be blushing.
It's so good to have you, Dan. I'm just so excited about having you on the show today to tell us about recovery and about being a man. And you trademarked something called the Man Rules, I think. Is that right?
I did, yes. I did. They're called the Man Rules, the ideas that we grow up with as children, that we learn from our parents, from the media, from the school system, from all over the place, about what it means to be a man.
Do you want to share with us a little bit about what are these man rules that we get programmed with? It's almost like we get marinated in them growing up, right?
We do get marinated in them. I call it the water. We're like fish in the water, and the water is reality, and we're in it, and we don't necessarily even know that we're in it, and the man rules are a huge, huge part of that reality. And the man rules are exactly what people might think. There's such rules as don't cry, don't ask for help, don't be vulnerable, don't be weak, be a provider, be a protector. Have as much sex as possible. Don't connect in relationships. And there are many more. We did an exercise one time with some young men in Illinois, and we wanted them to name all the different man rules that they could think of, and we filled 6 sheets of flip chart paper.
Wow.
Yeah,
There's a lot of rules in there, aren't there?
Yeah, and it's very layered, and so you can have one kind of surface level of rules, and then underneath that there's more rules, and any number of ways that the rules show up. But, I mean, the essence of it is the rules are exactly what they sound like. So what happens when you follow rules, Mike?
Then things go okay and you feel comfortable.
And what happens when you don't follow the rules?
When you break the rules, that hurts. It's uncomfortable and painful, right?
Right. So the interesting thing about the rules is there's not a lot of choice in them either. Nobody sat us down and said, "Here, what kind of man would you like to be? Here's all these rules that you're learning. Now, which ones work for you and which ones don't work for you?" We don't get that information. We don't get that opportunity. And so instead, it's more of trying to see some of these things for ourselves. Some people have awareness and they kind of have these breakthroughs around seeing the rules. And, you know, sometimes people have somebody come into their life who points out the rules. But the bottom line is that we don't often see them. There are these unconscious beliefs that we have that really permeate our experience. And when we follow them, we get acceptance. And not only do we get acceptance, but there's a measure of safety that we get from the rules. And that's a really important thing for your listeners to remember, is that when men follow the man rules, they get a degree of safety. And as human beings, we're all looking for safety. And so when I was a little boy and I cried, and then, you know, my dad would do what a lot of dads did, and that was make fun of me or tell me I'll give you something to cry about or that. But I quickly learned that if I stopped crying, man rule number one, don't cry. If I stopped crying, then I would stop being made fun of and I would stop being treated the way that I was being treated. And so that creates a measure of safety, not necessarily healthy safety, because I'm cutting off a part of myself. But the truth is, I was safer when I stopped crying. And you could come up with examples, and men all over the country and internationally, we have those examples of how we grew up and how we learned to follow certain rules by not being a part of who we were. I imagine you have some experiences you can draw from when you were a child, you know, and I don't know what kind of upbringing you had, but it doesn't have to have been somebody who grew up in a violent home or an alcoholic home or an abusive home or an unhealthy home. We get these rules all over the place and take them on whether we want to or not. So can you think of some times from your childhood where you learned some of the rules?
You know, I'm so glad you asked. I'd love to share a little bit of my story with you and get your thoughts on it. I think one issue for me, in addition to acceptance, there was an issue, I think, of validation as well, being affirmed and validated that I was a worthy person. And for me growing up, you know, I was the nerd in the class who was the bright kid, and I think a little bit maybe I think men have, there's some degrees of how masculine men are, maybe they're born that way, and some degree of maybe how more feminine they are, and I'm more of a soft male, I think. Never was really into, you know, violence. I remember the first fight I got into in school, I mean, I won, but after I beat the guy up, I started crying. And then I felt horrible shame, but there I was with all the other boys around me at the age of, you know, 8 or 10 or something like that, and I was crying. And it was just so traumatic for me to do that. And then I skipped a grade, and I was not very athletic, so I, you know, was often picked last to play on the sports team because I was younger than everybody else. And then growing up, just looking young and being younger and being a little skinny, and, you know, the girls weren't interested in me. So I went into young adulthood feeling inadequate as a man and unworthy as a man because I didn't fit those traditional male stereotypes. And that was traumatic for me, Dan. And it sort of took a long time for me to sort of get comfortable with just being who I am, which is sort of a soft male, not really endorsing violence. I mean, I do enjoy football a little bit, but I don't like boxing or wrestling at all. It just repulses me to see those guys beating each other up. And so in that way, I think I still have seeds of feeling like somehow I'm not adequate as a man because I don't enjoy that kind of thing.
Yeah. And one, you and I have a lot in common. I grew up very similarly and was in a very similar place. And more kind of open-hearted male. And, you know, it was something that was really difficult for me because I was so sensitive and I was so emotional. And many ways I felt like I stood outside of masculinity. And just like you, didn't feel like much of a man. In fact, for me, it was even, I'm not going to say more significant, but I had the added experience of not hitting puberty when all the other boys were hitting puberty. And
oh, yeah, me too.
Then,
I was late, too.
Yeah, so I was, not only was I late, but I actually got treated with growth hormone in order to grow. So I had the humiliation of having to go get shots at the age of 15 all the way to 16. In fact, I drove myself to my last set of shots. And because my dad, unfortunately, was passed out from drinking, and I needed to get there, and so I drove myself. And, you know, that was trauma for me and very humiliating and left an indelible mark of not being a man and, you know, needing even an outside agent in order to actually become a man. And that has stuck with me for a very, very long time, and it's taken me a long time to begin to find peace with. And so there's a lot of men who have had that experience, and some of them adopt really traditional male ways, and then some of them stay open-hearted and they stay more true to themselves. And I'm not saying that the man rules are bad, and I'm not saying that these are bad men that are out there, those that more, you know, subscribe to the traditional male role, but it's the idea that for both groups, there's not a lot of choice involved. And like you said, you still compare yourself, and you did compare yourself to that ideal. So there's guys who are living that ideal who are comparing themselves to that ideal, and they're still falling short. And so it's really this unattainable aspect of ideal masculinity that so many men find themselves up against and falling short of. And it doesn't take much to have your quote-unquote man card revoked. All you have to do is one thing. I mean, the jock who cries at the wrong time, or the jock who admits that he's gay, or the jock who, you know, just shows vulnerability at the wrong time can easily be ostracized by his associates. Now, it might get him points, and he might be seen as a leader. You don't know. And I think that's part of the confusion that is happening in this 21st century, is the rules are not as clear anymore. And so there's just a lot of confusion. And I'd say there's confusion for men in our generation and men younger and men, you know, older. I think the confusion is permeating people's experience because so much is changing.
Well, it's a double-edged sword, that ambiguity, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah.
Sure is.
There's a book by Terry Real called I Don't Want to Talk About It. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Book?
Yes, I am. Great. I have. Terry Real is amazing, and his work is amazing.
Yeah. And I remember one study that I saw. this will be really telling, I think. It was of college students who were depressed in a college counseling center. And I don't know, roughly maybe 100 men and 100 women. And the researchers told them all to go to their dorms and talk to their dorm mates about their pain, their depression, their sadness, their struggles. And so all these students did that. And it was funny because for the women, when they talked about their depression, they received increased emotional support and bonding with their female roommates. For the men who talked to their male roommates, their dorm mates, they experienced ostracism and rejection because of those man roles, I think, in terms of it's just not okay to be in pain and be vulnerable like that. And I think it was...
Yeah, you're breaking a serious code.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you go... Now, I think that's changing a little bit. I think our society is breaking down some of those hard and fast rules. And more and more famous men are coming out about their mental health, sports athletes and, you know, actors and radio personalities are coming out. They're writing books about their mental health. I mean, it's a pretty wonderful time to be a man as far as some of the greater possibilities, but at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if we did that study again, we found some very similar things. And it might not be ostracism this time. It might just be a very muted response, and the men don't necessarily feel closer to the men that, you know, they've shared this with.
Yeah.
But I am optimistic. I do believe things are getting better. Yeah.
You know, I just a couple things I want to ask you about. Well, and the first one is, it seems to me that this is a larger human dilemma, which is how to be who we truly authentically are, and to be true to ourselves and our souls and our masculinity, our femininity, or the mix of that that we have, and in other ways to be true to who we are. In a world where we so much have this attachment, this almost life and death need to belong and to be accepted and to be validated. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
I think that's absolutely right on. I mean, at the end of the day, this is another conceptual mechanism that people have toward authenticity. And honestly, I believe the man roles are some of the strongest phenomenon that get in the way of our authenticity, because it's so deeply rooted in who we are and who we think we naturally are. I mean, so many people say, well, that's just how men are. That's not going to change. Or he's such a boy. He's such a typical guy. You hear language like that, and it puts us in a box, and it paints us into a corner. And the challenge is, how do I be my authentic self? And I think you're absolutely, absolutely right. How do I share myself? I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. I'm still a very emotional and sensitive person. I mean, it's just part of who I am. And so we'll be watching America's Got Talent or The Voice or something, and I tear up. I tear up at the songs. I'm moved by the singers. I'm moved by the athleticism. I'm moved by the talent. I'm moved by the dramatic component of it. And I tear up and I cry. And my daughter thinks it's hilarious. And
you tear up.
Yes. And my wife doesn't. Like, the two of them are not crying. And my daughter, I shouldn't say hilarious, but she'll look over and she'll be like, are you crying? Are you crying? And it's sweet. It's sweet. And she's gently making fun of me, but that's authentic for me. And that prohibition against crying has caused me so much pain in my life, I'm not willing anymore to not express it. And, I mean, there's still times where I don't express it because I don't feel safe or it feels too vulnerable or whatever. And that's something that I'm still working on. But in this particular instance, I feel safe with them, and I'm able to express it. And I get choked up, and it's, you know, there's the part of me that's like, well, that doesn't even make sense. Why are you getting choked up over this? And so the logic and the questioning wants to come in, or whatever it is. But the authentic self, really, there's no rationale behind it. It's just authentic. It's just what's true for any person at any given time. And, you know, I don't think you could say a more accurate statement than what you said is that ultimately this is about people being authentic.
Yes. Oh, that's so well put. You know, I think to be beautiful really means to be yourself, and that we don't need to be accepted by others, but we need to fundamentally accept ourselves. And that's a great act of courage, I think, to do that.
It is, and it's a great journey. You know,
yeah,
it's an incredible journey that we take toward accepting ourselves and loving ourselves for who we are in a society that doesn't reward, you know, I mean, we give a lot of lip service to authenticity and vulnerability, but we're far from really being a society that honors that.
so true. You're listening to Well Mind with Dr. Mike. This is Dr. Michael McGee, your host, and we have with us as a guest Dan Griffin, an expert in being a healthy man in the 21st century. And we'll return right after this break to talk more about the men rules and being an authentic, healthy man. Welcome back to the Well Mind with Dr. Mike show. Dr. Michael McGee, your host here. And we're very, very fortunate today to have with us Dan Griffin, an expert in healthy masculinity in the 21st century and the author of multiple books, just excellent books. I've read some of his writing, and he's truly, truly a gifted writer and a visionary in this area. Welcome back, Dan.
Oh, thanks so much. I mean, I'm enjoying our conversation greatly, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Well, it's so good to have you. So, you know, I'm thinking, Dan, going forward, to help our listeners, especially the men in the audience, but also the women, to sort of help them to understand, what do we do with this? How do we evolve into our true authentic self and live comfortably in the world and follow whatever rules are comfortable for us and not follow the ones that aren't? And maybe if there's dysfunctional parts in us that don't work in our lives, how do we go about changing those? And I thought maybe to ask to start, you've had your own journey and your own evolution and your own growth into your true authentic self. And I wonder if you'd like to share with us a little bit of your story, your journey.
Sure, absolutely. I think the goal for all of us is to get choice in the matter of what kind of man or woman we want to be, and to really honor that choice and wear the rules like a loose garment. And so they become much less like rules and more like opportunities for self-expression. For me, my journey was one that started, I mentioned the kind of painful part of it is growing up in an alcoholic home with a dad who had serious anger issues and was verbally and emotionally and physically abusive, not because he was a bad man, but because he was a very sick man and had a lot of his own trauma. And, you know, hurt people. And I'm not excusing his behavior by any stretch of the imagination, but I've come to have a lot of compassion for him and come to understand after a lot of work, and I can't emphasize this enough, after a lot of work coming to really see my father as a wounded man who was doing the best he could. And but I grew up in that environment and was bullied by my father, and then being so small as I was, you know, compared to the other kids, especially when I was in high school. By the time I was in high school, I was still 5 feet tall, and so I was quite small. And then that was my freshman year, my sophomore year, then I started growing my junior year. And so that was humiliating, and I experienced bullying, and I experienced just a lot of painful stuff that came from being so small. And I was also one of the smartest in the class, and so that didn't actually help me in that regard. And so, you know, I felt like I stood outside of masculinity, and I got into alcohol and other drugs, and that really took over my life until I was 21. And, you know, I say until I was 21. Now, at the age of 47, 25 years into my recovery, I can't believe that I was able to get sober at the age of 21. But at that time in my life, it felt like, you know, I had already lived a lifetime before getting sober. And so I got sober, and something very interesting happened to me. I got sober at the same time that I was in sociology, in a sociology major, and we were doing sociology of women. And I was learning all about gender, and I was learning all about women, and I was learning all about women's pain and women's trauma. And I was learning about just the sociological studies that people had looked at regarding gender in general, and then especially women. And I remember asking my professor, I said, is anybody doing this for men? And she said, I don't know. Why don't you do some research? And so I did some research, and I did my senior thesis on men and masculinity, or my senior project for sociology, on men and masculinity. And so I'm learning that there are people who are looking at masculinity, who are deconstructing masculinity, and then I go to a recovery meeting. And I go to a recovery meeting, and I hear men talking about their feelings, men asking for help, men trying to hug me. Now, mind you, this is 25 years ago, and a man came up and tried to hug me. And I always say, I didn't know whether I should punch him in the face or just lean into it, because I was so desperate for connection and yet so afraid of it. And so, you know, that kind of started my journey, Mike, of really starting to look at, like, my life as a man, because I saw this different expression of masculinity that the guys who were doing it didn't really see themselves, because they're just doing what recovery tells you to do. Recovery tells you to share your feelings. Recovery tells you to get help and accept help. And recovery tells you to have a sponsor and share your intimate feelings with your sponsor and to have a higher power and admit weakness. It tells you to do all those things in order to save your life and in order to, you know, really be a sober person. But we don't talk about it in terms of gender. And I just happened to be, though, in that class. And so I was looking at this, and I was seeing these men, and I was like, this is crazy, like how these men are expressing themselves, and now how I'm expressing myself. And I'm not alone, and I'm with these guys. And so it started this amazing journey of me becoming the man I am today, where I really got present to the idea. I got to see the water that we were talking about earlier. I really got to begin to see the water and all the different expressions of masculinity that are in our society and that were in the subculture of recovery. And I got to begin to make some choices and have a sense of, like, this is the man I want to be and this is not the man I want to be. And I'm being told, actually, that a lot of these rules that I grew up with, not only are they not necessary, but there's other men who are struggling with them too, and men who I never would have thought, you know, guys who look like the typical, you know, guy, whether it's an all-American male or they look like a hard ass or they look like, you know, whatever, however it was they looked, I would hear them in recovery meetings and I'd hear them talk and I just thought, my gosh, these guys are afraid. These guys are insecure. These guys don't feel adequate as men. These guys are, you know, struggle with intimacy and vulnerability. I mean, it blew me away. So I started having, like, conversations with the men, and I did my master's research on the social construction of masculinity in the culture of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I interviewed men for that, and that led into my my book, A Man's Way Through the 12 Steps. And all of that has been me trying to get a better sense of myself as a man, also trying to put a conversation out there that was really like, this is what masculinity can be if we're willing to look at all the different pieces and components of masculinity and not and see the value of choice. And so that's been a big part of my journey, has been that, the choice and having open and honest conversations with other men.
Extraordinary, extraordinary. I'd love to comment on a little bit on what you've shared. Very moving. So we'll come back to this. You're listening to a very, very moving recount here on Well Mind with Dr. Mike with our guest, Dan Griffin, talking about his journey into the fullness of his own authentic masculinity. Please stay with us. We will continue this after the break. Welcome back to the Well Mind with Dr. Mike show. This is Dr. Michael McGee, your host, and we have with us today Dan Griffin, the author of multiple books on masculinity, being a healthy male in the 21st century. Welcome back, Dan.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying our conversation, and I appreciate your listening and asking me to share this part of my life.
You know, you just shared a very, very, very moving story of your trauma and combined with just the way that nature made you as a sensitive human being. And you know, your addiction in a way was a way of you trying to numb the pain with pleasure, as all people with addiction do, and it ended up making things worse in the long run for you. And you had the gift of really waking up very, very, very early. It's extraordinary. It's very few people who wake up and get into recovery at the age of 21. And you leveraged what you went through and went through an extraordinary process of post-traumatic growth. And I wonder if you'd share with the audience just the way that all of this, your childhood and everything was a gift for you.
It's crazy to think of it. I mean, if I was listening to myself 25 years ago, I'd be like, this guy is full of shit. I mean, I would say, you know, what is this guy smoking? He says he's sober, but now he's talking about how all this stuff is a gift. But there's no other way to explain it. I mean, if I hadn't been through what I went through with my father, I wouldn't be so sensitive to how men interact with children and how men interact with their spouses. And I wouldn't be the father or husband I am today. I wouldn't be the man I am today. I mean, it's really just that simple. And I strive to be a healthy, conscious man. And it's all because of what I went through. I mean, the addiction is absolutely a gift, because I wouldn't have been given exposure to recovery, and recovery has just been an amazing, amazing transformative experience for me. A design for living is what we call it, and it's really true, and it's really wonderful, because I've been given something that helps me with every part of my life, and that's extraordinary. And so I wouldn't have had that had I not used every drug that I used that got me into the rooms at a young age of 21. But then to take it even further and to see, but that's true for every time I got hit, every time I cried myself to sleep, every time I listened to my parents fight and my dad, you know, be abusive toward my mom, my father drinking himself to death, all of that has brought me to where I am. And I always say that, you know, I owe my sobriety to my father, because when he died, it really, that cemented my commitment to my sobriety. His death, I decided, was going to be my gift. His death, you know, was going to be my decision to live.
Yeah. Oh, so moving. So, Dan, you know, a lot of this is very hard to hear, that our trauma can be a gift. And when you're in the midst of your woundedness, that just doesn't make any sense. And
no,
so for our listeners out there who are broken and who are wounded and who are trying to find their way, men and women, but, you know, in particular for men, since the show is on men, you know, you what you went through was truly extraordinary, and you're an example for all of us of courage and authenticity and open-heartedness and being who you are and healing. Break it down for us, if you could, in the remainder of our show. Give us some guidance. How do you recommend that people, men, but all people, how do we how do we heal from our brokenness, and how do we how do we deal with these man rules, and how do we transform the way that you have?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I mean, I do have some specific things in mind that I think people, that men can really practice, can really do. I mean, this may sound a bit trite, but I would say one of the most important things is do the work. Is just do the work that's in front of you, and be willing to do that work. And part of how you know what that work is in front of you is the pain that you experience. And maybe you're not aware of your pain, but you're aware of anger. Maybe you're not aware of your pain, but you're aware of isolation. Maybe you're not aware of your pain, but you're aware of anxiety. All of that is part of the work. It's an indicator. It's a signpost that's saying there's work to be done here. And so I feel very, very strongly that men need a safe space where they can tell the truth to one another. And if you have just one man that you can speak your truth to, that's a gift. And if you have multiple men, that's an even greater gift. But I think men need a safe space where they can ask for help and where they can accept help, because, you know, we put so much emphasis on asking for help, but I think what we forget is you got to accept the help too. And that is maybe even harder for men than asking for the help. I believe in therapy, Mike. I mean, I know you do as well, but I believe in therapy wholeheartedly. I believe everyone deserves to have a therapist and or a couples therapist. But our society still views therapy as something for people who are screwed up or have something really wrong in their lives, rather than guidance and support in a challenging world with, you know, with some kind. Everybody has some kind of baggage from childhood. And all therapy is doing, it's helping us begin to work through that and beginning to see a way through it. So, you know, I think that's part of it. I think another way that we do the work is that we find ways to be of service. We find ways to be of service to other people, to the people closest to us, but then people that we don't even know. Community service projects, local organizations, service fraternities, service organizations, or just going out of our ways. But so much of men's pain is very self-centered. It's very much rooted in self. All pain, really, is rooted in self. And so when we can find ways to be of service, we get out of ourselves. That alone will not heal everything that needs to be healed, but it's an incredibly important part of the healing process. And then I think physical exercise and things like yoga, but just working out, running, the endorphin release is so incredibly important for us to be able to do. And I think the bottom line is, and I know you believe in this, and I practice this as much as I can. When men learn how to breathe, so that we can settle our nervous systems and respond rather than react, that's the gift. That right there, when we can breathe and respond, we can transform our lives. Any moment to moment, just the act of taking a deep breath and settling that nervous system and being able to respond.
Oh, well said. Well said. Thank you for that. We'll continue this. This is the Well Mind with Dr. Mike show. Dr. Michael McGee here. We have with us Dan Griffin, an expert on being a healthy man in the 21st century. And we'll be right back after this break to continue to talk about how to heal and evolve into our true authentic male selves. Welcome back to the Well Mind with Dr. Mike show. I'm Dr. Michael McGee, your host. And today we have with us Dan Griffin. And Dan is an author of multiple books on recovery as a man, on being a healthy man in the 21st century. He has written some really just beautiful books that I have had a chance to look at some of his writing. And One book is A Man's Way Through Relationships, Learning to Love and Be Loved. Another book is A Man's Way Through the 12 Steps. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm enjoying our conversation, and I always appreciate the opportunity to share this information, so thank you for having me.
Oh, you're such a gift to the world, Dan. You truly are. You know, we have one more remaining time, and you've given such wisdom to us, the people who are hurting out there and who are trying to find themselves and to grow from their pain and to transform their pain into a gift, including the pain of just being born into our society with all these unconscious rules that were marinated in the water that you said that we are all swimming in. And you've talked about doing the work and really facing, embracing, and going directly into your pain and creating a safe place for yourself with loving others and learning to have the courage to ask for help and then to accept help. And you've talked about therapy and about finding ways to be of service, and you've talked about really getting out of the self-centered way that pain causes us to focus within. You've talked a little bit about exercise, about just learning how to breathe and settle and ground ourselves when we're activated so that we can respond rather than react. I just would love to get for our listeners some more wisdom from you in terms of other things that we can do to become the men that we truly are inside our authentic masculinity and to heal from the trauma of our socialization.
Yeah, well, you just said a big word there that I think is incredibly important, and that's the trauma piece. Finding people who understand trauma and can speak to trauma is just so critically important, whether it's EMDR or brain spotting. Those two in particular are such incredibly important interventions for helping people heal from trauma.
Can you tell our audience a little bit about brain spotting and EMDR? What are those?
Eye movement, desensitization, reprocessing. I get so used to just rattling it off. Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing is EMDR, and then the other is brain spotting. Both work in your brain to basically help process unprocessed memories, because that's what trauma is it's basically, if you imagine our usual functioning as we have an experience, we process that experience, it's like a street. You're riding along a street, you come to this experience, you process it, and then the street keeps moving. But when you have a traumatic experience, you're on the street, you get to it, you don't process the experience, and it's a dead end. And then you stay stuck in that dead end. So anytime you have something in your life occur that reminds you or that is similar to that event, it can trigger a traumatic response. So what EMDR and brain spotting do is they help you to process that experience so you get a throughway into whatever that experience was. So EMDR and brain spotting, I highly, highly recommend. I think, journaling is incredibly important and a great way for men to – what men have to do is, like, whether it's yoga or journaling or prayer, we have to get rid of this idea that says it's weak or it's sissy or it's for women. I mean, I've done yoga for 18 years, 19 years now, and I'm still one of the only men in yoga class. And it's just kind of like, really? Like, why aren't more men doing yoga? Because I tell you what, you do those strenuous activities and those strenuous sports, one of the best things to help you heal and help your muscles and your joints and all of that is yoga, not to mention the added benefit of breathing. So we have to get past some of the ways that we view, I think, these activities. And you just have to trust. I mean, your listeners have no reason to trust me, but they have no reason not to trust me. And I've got that added experience of experience. And so, when I say these work, I mean they work. I've done them, and I've watched hundreds of men do them, thousands of men. that I know that have done them as well. And so journaling is something that I think is incredibly important. Meditation and prayer are huge for me. I start my day with meditation and prayer, and it's just an incredibly important way to start the day. But I think it starts with having one person in your life to whom you can tell the truth. One person to whom you can share, with whom you can share part of your inner life, the part of you that goes unrecognized and often not honored by somebody else because you don't know how to share it. That, man, that's the gift when you can find that one person and take that risk. Because this is all about taking risks. And if you want to talk about being courageous, then one of the man rules is about having courage. I think there are a few things that are more courageous than doing this work and digging into the muck. But it's in that muck where you find the gold, and it's nowhere else. It's only in the muck.
Wow, that is so beautiful. You know, it's almost like one of the things that, you know, I do addiction psychiatry, and one of the things that we teach ourselves, and I practice myself every day is get current or get connected with somebody every day where you tell them everything that's going on and everything you're thinking, feeling, and doing. And be let go of shame, let go of embarrassment, say it all, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything. And like you said, people who have addiction, it's a gift in a way because if they use the 12-step program or other vehicles, a recovery coach or recovery mentor from Refuge Recovery or other programs, if they have that one safe, wise, tough, kind, loving person, as you said, to who they can tell the truth every day, that really is so, so important. And, you know, if you look at normal people, quote-unquote normal people, but people who maybe don't suffer from mental illness or addiction, the healthy, well-adjusted people, they're telling the truth every day, all day, to maybe multiple people. And the more that we're able to tell or to surround ourselves with safe, loving, wise, supportive people who accept us exactly as we are, I sometimes say that the people who judge you don't matter and the ones who matter don't judge you. And it's so important to surround ourselves with people who accept us exactly as we are, and to tell them the truth. That's such a great piece of wisdom. And I guess the other thing I want to ask about in just the closing seconds that we have, Dan, is what about for men getting in touch with their own femininity?
Well, I think, you know, you call it getting in touch with your femininity or getting in touch with your authentic self. I mean, I think all men have a capacity for doing those things that we often identify as being feminine. And I don't really consider it a feminine self as much as it's part of your humanity, and you get in touch with that, and then you figure out, well, with all of that in mind, what kind of man do I want to be? And what kind of man am I? You know, not all men are as emotional and sensitive as I am. That doesn't make them better or worse than me. It's just, how can you be true to that and really honor that part of you and maybe even cultivate it? You know, maybe there's some men who see that. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Honor yourself, honor your truth.
Honor yourself and honor your truth. Today we've had with us Dan Griffin. Dan, thank you so much for joining us and blessing us with your presence and your wisdom. It's been just so great to have you on the show. Listeners, please visit Dan Griffin's site, Dan Griffin, GRIFFIN.com. Get his books. His books are a source of incredibly compassionate, wise, and humane guidance, especially for men in navigating their ways to becoming and honoring their true self as men. Thank you, Dan, and best wishes to you and your ongoing work.
Thank you so much, and congratulations to you for your podcast and your work and all the joy you're bringing to people's lives with the work that you do.
Everybody, be well. Thank you for joining us on the Well Mind with Dr. Mike show. We'll see you next month.